This is Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Well, head and neck cancers account for approximately 3% of all cancers in the United States. And though there are effective treatments available, the results of treatment often leave patients with some significant challenges to overcome. Well, here with more on this are Jenna Gardner. She's a speech-language pathologist with the Physical Medicine and Rehab Department at Upstate Medical University, and Anne Ray, a registered nurse specializing in oncology. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Let's start by explaining what we mean when we say head and neck cancers. Anne, why don't you tell us?
Yes, head and neck cancers is a group of cancers that sometimes they say very simply anything from the shoulders up, excluding the brain, excluding eye, excluding skin and scalp. So it could be all kinds of cavities. It can be your sinus cavities, it can be your nasal cavity, it can be your mouth, it can be your lips, it can be back of your throat, your tongue, larynx, voice box, those areas.
So anything that occurs in those anatomical structures are considered cancers of the head and neck.
Correct.
I mean, any cancer that occurs in those structures.
Yes, they clump it as such.
Right. Jenna, tell me, what are the biggest risk factors for developing that kind of cancer?
Our major risk factors that we try to educate on are obviously smoking or any kind of tobacco use and alcohol consumption. And then more recently, we're seeing many HPV-related head and neck cancer cases.
Explain that.
HPV is a sexually transmitted disease.
It's human papillomavirus.
Yes. And it is a leading cause for cervical cancer, but they're now finding that it's resulting in head and neck cancer as well.
And is that as a result of perhaps oral sexual activity?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they're seeing more of it in the oral pharyngeal kind of throat and head and tongue area.
Yep. And the one... It's silent. That's the thing. When you do contract HPV, you have no signs or symptoms. So it's something that we're working on to try and get awareness out there to get vaccinated.
Oh, so that's really part of the message here, because mm-hmm. there is that the vaccine. But the vaccine is available mostly for younger people. Tell us about that.
At this time, they're trying to catch people before they come sexually active and have... already entered that zone of being at risk for having contracted it. So we're trying to get awareness out for the younger generation to get vaccinated before they become
sexually
active.
And that's both for males and females, I understand. The recommendations
Correct.
Are now for both of those. So that's on the increase, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw that some other risk factors have to do with things like if you eat a lot of preserved or highly salted foods, and there's some occupational exposures as well.
Yes.
So you've seen that as well.
Yep.
So how do you know if it's, in this case, when you're talking about HPV, it's silent, but are there other symptoms? How do you know, for example, Anne, that you might have some kind of an oral cancer?
Well, there's different symptoms for different sites, of course. But what we usually go through is talking about any lumps or sores in your mouth or throat, any hoarseness or change in your voice, any swallowing problems or pain, any bleeding in your nose, mouth, or throat, or chronic ear pain. Those things maybe you would definitely have your doctor check out.
So some of this also has to do with the fact that it's chronic and doesn't seem to because a lot of the symptoms that you've just described could be caused by any number of things, the common cold and a whole variety of other things.
Absolutely.
That's right.
And that's why sometimes these cancers aren't caught until they're a little more advanced. So we're getting the stage 3 and 4 cancers because it's misdiagnosed early on as just the common cold or something else.
Isn't it now part of a standard dental exam to do an evaluation for oral cancer?
We're working toward that.
Okay,
that would be the goal for a standard. And yes, there's actually a 6-step screening exam. Hopefully the dentist will begin doing as a routine and with every dental visit. And that will catch some oral cancers earlier than later.
Right. But some of...
As well, I should also add this, as well as we are also trying to promote self-exam as well.
Mm-hmm. And We'll have information about that on our website in terms of the kinds of things you can do. We'll have a link to the whole kind of...
Yes.
Is it a 5 or 6 step procedure?
6 steps.
We'll definitely do that. If you're joining us, you're listening to Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Ann Ray and Jenna Gardner, and we're talking about cancer of the head and neck. And I had no idea that there's that large a variety of problems that we can come across. So if you notice any symptoms at all, you should really check in with your dentist or your doctor immediately.
Absolutely.
Is that true?
Yes.
Yes.
But in the meantime, what are the kinds of things you can do to protect yourself?
Well,
go to oral care is number one. Trying to eliminate any tobacco from your life is also very important.
Let's talk more about that. Mm-hmm. Tobacco, most people just think of smoking, and probably the vast majority of people who are involved with tobacco use are smokers. But there are other types of tobacco use. Can you explain that?
Yep. you chew and snuff. Those are all common types of tobacco as well that you don't think about. But any tobacco product in general puts you at risk for developing cancer.
If you're using it on a chronic basis,
mm-hmm.
You're saying.
But even secondhand smoke can result in that too. So.
Very important to know. So what are some other things, Anne, that you can be doing in terms of protecting yourself?
Well, of course, alcohol is a risk factor, so you would limit that the best you can. Definitely perform self-evaluations yourself just to check to see.
So you basically need to have an awareness that this kind of problem
can
occur, and you need to make sure that anything that is worrisome or troubling to you in the area of the head and neck, you should definitely have checked.
Yes, as you would with a breast cancer.
Exactly.
Or testicular self-exam. Same sort of a thing, just to be aware and of your body. And actually, to look at your mouth to know what is your normal. Mouths are very strange looking if you haven't really looked in one. And then you would know what is abnormal.
So know your baseline.
Yes.
And then if there are changes, is what you need to focus on.
Yes.
And again, that's our goal, is to get it out there that people treat this like a self-breast exam or testicular exam, that you would just make it part of your day-to-day routine or weekly routine, or however frequently you feel comfortable checking those things, but you still follow up with that routine care with your primary or your dentist for the more in-depth exam.
So what are the treatments that are currently available? You're talking about cancer, so just run through, there are standard types of treatment. And obviously they must depend on where the location,
yes.
There are certain factors, the location, the stage. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about that, Anne.
Well, with medical oncology, we would see them being treated with combination chemotherapy, biological therapy, and radiation therapy. It would be a 7-week course with the infusional therapy once a week, with radiation therapy daily, Monday through Friday for 7 weeks. And it's a vigorous treatment for sure. And I would have to say it's probably one of the toughest outpatient therapies to get through. Not only is it the 7 weeks of therapy, but then it's a few weeks of at least a few weeks of recovery afterward.
And this is without surgery.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the surgical
intervention.
Yes.
Let's talk about, for example, when do you see surgery being performed? What are the criteria?
You can have partial or complete tongue resection if needed, parts of the jaw, sinus cavities, they have a laryngectomy where you remove the voice box completely, and people become what they call neck breathers. They have, people have probably seen it, a hole in their neck, and it's called a stoma, and then they breathe through their neck from there on out because the tumor is too aggressive and they can't just be treated with chemo or radiation.
So it has to do with how aggressive the tumor is, the stage of the cancer, the person's age, and their general health, it seems to me, are a lot of the factors that determine what kind of treatment that you're going to undergo. But first of all, how effective are the treatments in general?
It's
variable.
Yeah. Some people start out the chemo radiation route and then end up with more surgical intervention after the fact. They have recurrence. The problem is there's so many lymph nodes in that area as well, so it's very hard to get everything out.
So the message really is be alert, be aware, and if you think there's anything abnormal or unusual, different from your so-called baseline in areas that you can see, get some advice or some help from a medical professional.
Absolutely.
But now, once a patient has been treated and diagnosed and treated, they often face some, you know, problems following the treatment. Tell us about, that's where you come in, Jenna, I think, particularly when we talk about something like a laryngectomy or a tongue resection.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what you do and what happens.
So myself and one of my colleagues work with this population as far as swallowing management. And then I work primarily with the laryngectomy population and voice restoration afterwards.
What does that mean?
So when you have a laryngectomy, they remove your voice box. So you can no longer create sound with your body. Your vocal cords are gone. So there are some options, but either using a device called an electrolarynx to talk. Most people have seen their little handheld devices that you can hold up to your neck. Creates vibration, and you can talk that way.
So it creates a buzzing sound, and mm-hmm. then by using your lips and your tongue and your mouth, you can create the sounds that yep. we recognize as speech. But it doesn't sound exactly like our
no,
normal
voices. No, it's more mechanical sounding. and then there's another option for, it's called a voice prosthesis, where they would come in for another surgery, and a hole is actually punctured between the trachea and the esophagus in that wall. And we put in a voice prosthesis that lets airflow back through as you breathe in and out of your trachea. If you occlude your stoma in your neck, the air goes through the prosthesis, vibrates in the tissue of your esophagus,
wow.
and you can create speech.
That's pretty new.
It is. It's yeah. it's well, it's been around for a while actually, but it's come a long way from the beginning, and it's the most natural communication option after a laryngectomy that's out there.
But nevertheless, it sounds like these are challenges, quite great challenges mm-hmm. for people. So I understand that you folks are involved right now in helping these people post-treatment. I know you're doing it in terms of therapy, but also you're providing some kind of a support group. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Anne and I and two other providers here at Upstate, Dina and Robin, all co-run the Head and Neck Cancer Support Group. And we meet on the third Wednesday of every month at 5:30. At the Oasis Learning Center through HealthLinks, and it's been a great resource for this population because there is so much that they're dealing with, and you know, there's just not a lot of awareness out there. So it's been we've had great feedback from all of the patients coming. That
how long has it been running?
Well, we recently merged. We had two separate support groups. I was focused more on the laryngectomy support group, and Anne, Dina, and Robin were running. You had a different title.
It was a different title, but it was the Head and Neck Support Group in general. Yes.
Okay. So,
how do people get involved if they want to learn more about it?
We have a phone number. Mm-hmm. They can call it at 464-5819 or 464-5262.
Okay, so then if anyone's interested in our listening audience, they can make those phone calls and become involved in this kind of support group. And as you said, it meets once a month?
Yeah, once a month, third Wednesday of every month. And it's for patients, caregivers, friends, anybody that's interested.
Wonderful. Well, I want to thank you all for coming in today. Very informative, very interesting, and something we really need to keep a watch out for, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
My guests have been Jenna Gardner. She's a speech-language pathologist with the Physical Medicine Rehab Department at Upstate Medical University, and Anne Ray, a registered nurse specializing in oncology. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.